Welcome to the Manufacturing the Future podcast, the show designed to help you future-proof your manufacturing operations. Each episode features interviews with innovative manufacturing leaders and subject matter experts who share their insights and best practices about the technology that can empower you to streamline operations, prepare your organization for what lies ahead, and continue to keep our world turning. I'm your host, Carrie Jordan, Vice President of Product Management at Epicor. Now, for today's episode.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for listening. Welcome to our show where we're talking with the manufacturing leaders who are reimagining, innovating, and driving the future of this great industry. Today, I'm very happy to be speaking with Dan Izaki, the CEO of United Safety Technology, known as UST, and he's also the president of the American Medical Manufacturers Association. His company is a trailblazing manufacturing company. They're dedicated to producing personal protective equipment, or PPE. They formed in 2020 during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, and they first focused on N95 respirators, but since then expanded into additional PPE and is driving the mission for high-quality medical-grade manufacturing in the United States. This is quite a story to hear from Dan's perspective, how they navigated business through such a disruptive time, managing to grow sustainably, and now looking forward to the next phase of growth for their business. He's got an exciting and interesting career path as well to explore. So let's go ahead and dive in. Dan, thank you so much for being here.
Good morning, and it's so nice to finally get to have an opportunity to talk with you.
Looking forward to it. You know, as we get started, let's get to know you. Please tell us about yourself, how you started United Safety Technology, and I understand your journey brings you from Wall Street to manufacturing. Can you tell us about that path?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I started my career off from university working on Wall Street. It was a great time and spent about 15 years doing that, 15 to almost 20 years doing that. And that came to an end. And I started looking for other things to do. And I invested in a number of different types of businesses throughout the years. And one of those investments took me into the distribution world and started a distribution company where we distributed all types of different products and as well as investing in different types of startups in different areas. And that's been my journey for the last 10 to 15 years, entrepreneurial ventures. And when the pandemic began, I live in New York City and have a lot of friends who are in the medical space. And they started telling me that there were shortages in certain PPE, gloves, masks, gowns. And, you know, I thought to myself, well, that doesn't make sense. Let me know what you're looking for. And I'll have my sourcing team try and identify, you know, those items for you. And they gave us a list and we started looking at it. And we quickly realized that, you know, you couldn't get any of it domestically because most of it's not produced domestically. And then when you look to where it's produced, it's mostly Southeast Asia and mainly China. So, of course, at the beginning of the pandemic, trying to help, we reached out to different factories in China to try and help source the product, mainly respirators and gloves. And the story goes from there. All the nightmares that we heard about anecdotally from factories not, you know, requiring cash deposits or requiring you to pay in full and then not delivering, the Chinese government rerouting shipments, not being able to get on vessels or on planes to get the goods here. So there's a complete disruption in supply chain across the board from A to Z. And we started having conversations internally, you know, the fact that it's not acceptable that certain things are not produced here. And and the conversation was, well, someone should be doing it here. The conversation turned to, why don't we do it here? And what we did was, in the beginning of the pandemic, we jumped into action and started a N95 respirator facility out in California. We got that up and running in record time and started producing N95 respirators. And while looking at the space of PPE in general and domestic manufacturing, there were a bunch of people that stood up facilities to produce respirators and surgical masks and gowns. But the one critical piece were nitrile exam gloves. And that was something that we started investigating, developing production of, and we quickly realized that although it's a commodity-type item, you know, and you never really, most people don't give a lot of thought to how it's produced, it's actually extremely capital-intensive and very, very precise, requiring a huge amount of technology to be able to successfully manufacture them. At the time, the federal government also identified this hole in the supply chain and put out a bid for standing up nitrile exam glove production in the United States. And we were one of many companies that submitted proposals for that. And we were fortunate to be one of the companies selected for a government HHS grant under the IBMSD program to expand domestic production. And that's where we are today.
That's great. What a fascinating story. So can you tell us more about business today? So where are you located? What products are you manufacturing now?
Yeah. So we took over the Bethlehem Steel Mill in Sparrows Point, Baltimore. It's a historic site, about 740,000 square feet. And, you know, historically, it was the place that made the steel that basically helped the United States win World War II, for sure.
Right.
And et cetera.
Yeah.
So we're breathing some life into that old facility. We're currently in the process of renovating it and installing our production equipment. Our equipment, for instance, is about each production line to produce our gloves. And it's approximately almost 580 metric tons of steel. They stand about 55 feet tall and about 500 feet long. So it's extremely heavy, specialized equipment. And we're very excited to be at that facility, mainly because it offers us all the things that we need to be successful in producing gloves, including, you know, all of the utilities, sewer, water, gas, electric. And, you know, this facility was designed for us to move into.
That's perfect. It worked out great. As well as to bring, like you said, new life to this historic location. That's great. All right. So on our show, we like to explore the power of technology in manufacturing. And for you, as someone at the forefront of such an innovative manufacturing firm, how are you using technology to streamline operations, maybe to ensure medical grade compliance, especially in a field just as critical as PPE production?
Yeah, absolutely. We believe the success of all future manufacturing will rely heavily on technology, data visualization, and automation, especially as we try and compete with other regions of the world, particularly Southeast Asia, where costs of labor are fractions of what they are in the United States. In order for us to be competitive, we must implement huge amounts of technology, and we do. The nice thing about where we're coming from is that because we're starting in this age where there's so much advanced technology available, everything from advanced automation to artificial intelligence to different types of machine learning technologies, we're very fortunate that as we start with a clean slate, you know, we're not inheriting a legacy type system that we have to convert to. We're starting from scratch and we're implementing technology at the basic levels, you know, in three main areas where we're focused. So that's in productivity, energy reduction, and in quality. So in terms of productivity, you know, it's all about increased throughput and reducing your operating costs. So, for example, we designed our high-speed line that run somewhere between 45,000 to 48,000 units per hour, which in the glove-making industry is sort of the benchmark for what your output production is. You know, that's compared to industry standard of somewhere around 30,000 per hour. And as you can imagine, when you're producing that much more with the same amount of labor, your costs go down significantly. You know, we're also, in terms of productivity, using advanced automation technologies that, you know, so we designed a proprietary technique where we're able to use end-to-end automation in our processes. So from the time that the raw material, the raw latex gets poured into the first tank, the storage tank, all the way through boxing and cartoning and palletizing, we're using automation for almost all of that, which is what I believe to be an industry leader position. I don't know a lot of other companies that are, at least in the glove business, that are able to do that. Secondly, energy reduction. In addition to being good for the environment, it's also good for the pocketbook. We're using less energy to produce more gloves than the industry standard. And we do that by using certain types of technologies that retain heat and repurpose the heat. We also recycle the used water that comes out of our process. And obviously, in terms of buying the utilities from the facility, like the chiller, the boilers, compressors, we always look to buy the most energy efficient items that are available on the market. And then in the third area, which I think is one of the most exciting, is in quality. quality when you're producing a medical grade type product is extremely important to our customers and to us, and really in our DNA. And we, you know, when a customer puts on one of our gloves, we want them to know that it was made with the highest level of quality and provide them the greatest sense of protection, since people that are using these gloves are on the front line, and especially during a pandemic, you know, nobody wants to take any chances with poor quality. So, you know, in that, we've invested in robotics that allow us to design and optimize our processes and different combinations of raw materials that go into our formulations in real time and very efficiently. So that really allows us to hone our processes without actually having to run them through the whole line. We can simulate the process with a robotic dipping arm. And we also use advanced visualization systems, camera systems, and artificial intelligence to do real-time quality inspections in the line. So we're identifying pinholes as they occur and identify which gloves potentially need to come off the line and won't make quality. And that obviously is a huge winner from a quality perspective.
That's incredible. I mean, especially for those focus areas, productivity, energy reduction, quality, using things like robotics, advanced visualization. It's really fascinating. And it's great, like you said, that you started with the clean slate. You didn't have to worry about the legacy sort of systems in place. You could start with the latest and greatest. That's great. I can imagine, though, this wasn't easy, you know, especially with such a difficult, you know, time in the economy, like you said, such supply chain disruption. Can you talk about some of those challenges that you've had to overcome along the way, and how did you do it?
Yeah. So, you know, in terms of supply chain disruptions, you know, standing up a factory with all the different requirements, everything from, you know, sourcing steel and concrete to control panels and various types of utilities have been challenging this period, especially since, in addition to there being supply chain shortages, we also see the investment in industrial manufacturing an all-time record high. So in addition to competing for commodities, we're also competing for labor, we're competing for services, general contractors and subcontractors. So it's been challenging, but not impossible. You know, where there's a will, there's a way. You know, we were fortunate in the sense that our government contract was awarded under the Defense Production Act. So we were able to, you know, use that in some instances to get ahead of the queue for certain things like on the robotics requirements that we've had. There was a long lead time for some of the robots. We were able to, with the help of the manufacturers, really get to, you know, get what we needed to get it in place. And in terms of labor, you know, we have a great team that we put together of really highly skilled engineers, where we're sort of, when we identified how to be successful with this project and where the technology for glove production exists, it's really currently in Malaysia. I think most people would agree that the best producers in the world are in Malaysia right now. And we were able to identify, you know, teams of people there that really knew the glove industry extremely well, did it at the highest levels, understood what technology really means to this whole process. And, you know, for instance, our lines, you know, that we designed ourselves, our production lines, you know, we're using a lot of smart sensors, data, and IoT to provide huge amounts of data that needs to be analyzed, visualized, and understood, processed to really identify issues before they become issues. And I'll give you an example. So we have vibration sensors throughout our production lines that are listening constantly. And as soon as there's some sort of reading that doesn't make sense, the technician is immediately dispatched to that area to visually inspect what's going on, to identify if there is a potential issue. You know, and then that really affects productivity because, you know, slowing down, shutting down our production line, which runs 24/7, is extremely expensive and costly in terms of time and production. So effectively, we never really want to shut the lines down if we don't have to. And the ability to identify issues before they become issues is going to help us significantly do that. And we couldn't do that if we weren't using all of these different types of technology to help identify and predict where the issues are going to pop up.
And question for you on this, you mentioned talent and bringing in, you know, highly skilled engineers, really critical to your business. How do you train new employees when they join your organization? What is your onboarding process like?
So we have a pretty robust process, obviously. Our HR department, once someone's recruited, they bring them on. They talk, there's a couple of weeks of training, you know, especially regarding the mission, what we're trying to do. And obviously, depending on what the individual's role is, there's individual technical training. And the idea is really to develop the talent and the bench domestically. And the great thing about our core team of engineers and production folks is that they are really leaders. They really are looking to train and bring that knowledge back home that was exported abroad, you know, about 25, 30 years ago. And we are committed to working with other bluff companies as well as other manufacturing companies through our organization, the American Medical Manufacturing Association, to help share that information regarding technology, process, et cetera. The other thing I would like to add is that we are committed to hiring 30% of our workforce of people with disabilities. We have found that, you know, historically, that's extremely underutilized workforce and a very efficient workforce. And we are working with a number of different state, local, and federal agencies in putting together training programs and awareness that is something that we're actively hiring for and we're looking for. And we're very, very excited about that. And we're, you know, I know that there's a number of other manufacturing companies out there or manufacturing and distribution companies out there that are also doing similar type things. And it's such a win from so many different perspectives. It's a win for the employees. It's a win for the company and it's a win for the community in general. So that's something that I am personally very excited about. And I am very happy and excited that, you know, that our team has also crashed around that whole idea and are making every effort to implement it and even expand it.
I couldn't agree more. And it's so interesting when we on this show talk about technology, it always comes back to the power of people and the team that you have in place. That's really what drives the success, regardless of, you know, what kinds of technologies you've invested in. It's always back to the people.
Absolutely. Your human resources are your number one asset for sure.
Definitely. So in looking at your organization, you know, I have read a bit about how speed, innovation, automation, sustainability, you've talked about these points as well. Could you elaborate a little bit more on how they're helping to shape the future of your organization?
Well, you know, as we compete on a global market, if we don't use this, there will be, you know, zero chance to compete. You know, we're competing against regions that have extremely low cost of labor, cost of utilities, in a lot of cases subsidized by their governments to effectively sell into our markets extremely low-priced product that we would never be able to compete with if we weren't using all of this technology. And, you know, and so in addition to being economically viable, it's also something that's going to help us produce a much higher quality of product just because the amount of eyes, the virtual eyes, if you will, that go into the process are infinitely more efficient and greater than just, you know, typical human visual inspection. So I think it's really critical to the future of our industry, and I would assume all industry that uses manufacturing, we must leverage technology to the highest levels.
Absolutely. So on that point, could you share some advice with maybe other manufacturing leaders who are thinking about investing in technology, taking their business to the next level, and even career advice too that you know, have seen throughout your journey that's really helped you? What advice would you share?
Well, I would say that, you know, make sure that you have the best team available. Always hire the best people that you can find that obviously are technically competent, but also share the company's value and buy into the mission, because ultimately that's what's critical. After that, you know, I would say that there's, you know, there's a number of resources available out there in the world that are like-minded on or focused on helping manufacturers implement technology and succeed. Almost every state has an MEP. That are great. We work closely with the organizations in Maryland, and they've been, you know, in terms of helping find resources, they've been fantastic, great connectors. There are also some federal programs where they look to link manufacturers with various types of technology solutions. I also know that all of the big technology companies, from Microsoft to Siemens to some of the others, also have, as well as Oracle, also have groups that look to partner with small business and help advise on technology systems. And I'll share a list with you after this of some resources that you could potentially share with the listeners.
That would be great. That would be great. And we'll link them in the show notes. Well, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. As we wrap up, for anyone who wants to learn more about UST or the American Medical Manufacturers Association or connect with you, where can they find you? Where would you point them?
So our website, www.unitedsafetytech.com. That's one starting point. You can sign up to receive our newsletter. You can sign up to receive our updates and track our progress if interested. Also on LinkedIn, Twitter, under United Safety Tech as well. And yeah, those would probably be the best ways to get in touch if need be.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Great. Thank you so much.
That was Dan Izaki, the CEO of United Safety Technology and the president of the American Medical Manufacturers Association. To everyone listening in, thank you so much for being a part of the future of manufacturing.
Thank you for listening to Manufacturing the Future, brought to you by Epicor. For the latest episodes, search for the show on your podcast platform of choice. Make sure to subscribe to get notified when a new episode is released. To learn more about Epicor, visit epicor.com.